On January 20th, a 15-year-old, differently abled student sat alone in his school bus, waiting to go home. Gunshots rang out and two bullets landed, ending the life of a boy who had a contagious smile. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette columnist Tony Norman wrote, "On the day he was shot, 15-year-old Marquise Campbell remained nameless. Authorities said he was a special education student at Oliver Citywide Academy in Marshall, Shadland. But that was all they would reveal. For the remainder of the day, he was nameless." My name is Dawn Lincheck. Welcome to Meet in the Middle. In the last several days, we've come to learn who Marquise Campbell was and is. As of the recording of this podcast, the alleged shooters remain at large, and the reason for the shooting baffles everyone. The numbness of grief is beyond words. Reverend Kelly Smith, associate pastor at Calvary United Methodist Church on the north side of Pittsburgh, where Oliver Academy is located, organized a gathering of pastors in a show of support for Oliver Academy's teachers and staff. Today, Meet in the Middle is messy and hard and emotional, and I invite you to join me as we sort through all the feels of this story.
This is a special edition of the Meet in the Middle podcast brought to you by the anti-racism team of the Western Pennsylvania Conference of the United Methodist Church. Here now is Dawn Lincheck.
Joining me today on Meet in the Middle is Reverend Kelly Smith. She is the associate pastor at Calvary United Methodist Church on the north side of Pittsburgh. Kelly, thanks for being with me today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This story about Marquise Campbell, let's break it down for folks. Tell the story.
So last week, I was in the office working. I was on a staff meeting, and one of our members from Calvary, Brittany, called me, and I didn't take the call because I was on a staff meeting, and I sent her a text message and said, "Hey, I'm in a staff meeting. Do you need me?" And she said, "Yes, please call me immediately." And so I clicked over, and she was frantic. She is a staff person at Oliver Citywide Academy, and she was in the midst of her tears. She shared that one of her students had been shot right outside of school, and she kept saying over and over again, "They shot him, Kelly, they shot him." And I spoke with her for a few minutes, calmed her down, prayed with her, and hung up and told her to keep me posted. Immediately, the staff meeting I was on prayed for her and for the staff and students and families from Oliver and the surrounding areas. And then within the next 20, 25 minutes, the news started reporting the shooting, and it blew up from there.
Marquise Campbell was 15 years old.
Correct.
He was a differently abled student.
Yeah, all the students at Oliver Citywide Academy are students from the Pittsburgh Public School District who have IEPs. And it's generally students from individual schools all over the district who are struggling and who need a little bit more help or resources than what their particular schools can handle. Or can provide. And so they're sent to Oliver, and there's a much lower student to faculty, student to staff ratio there. There's a lot more support systems, educational assistants, social workers, counselors, and so on.
I have to tell you, this story hit me hard, I think it hit everybody hard because it's a student, he's on a school bus, but you and I both have children, and putting your child on a school bus and, you know, is hard enough as it is. Mm-hmm. But I have a child who is differently abled. And when you put a child who's differently abled on a school bus, the intensity of emotion just is so much higher, because you know that they may not have the skills to protect themselves, and there's that additional fear.
Yeah, they're particularly challenged. I mean, it's not, he was getting on a van, a school van. And so they have, as far as I understand, he was the only person getting on that van that day. And the problem with the school, not the problem, the challenge with the school is they draw kids from all the neighborhoods all over the city. And this is where they all come and they have to drive through different neighborhoods. He was from Sheridan. So he would drive through Sheridan, I assume the West End Bridge and or go up Brighton Road. But then you have kids from Homewood. You have kids from the East Hills. You have kids from Crafton, from Mount Washington, from Mount Oliver. And, you know, in urban environments, there's territory issues in and amongst young people. And I don't want to say explicitly gang issues, although that can be the case, but they don't intermingle. And this school is challenged because they do. And so Brittany and her sister Megan were telling me, like, students that come from Homewood have to drive through the north side to get to the school. And that's not always safe for them. And we take it for granted because we come from a place of privilege and are, you know, in our suburbs where we're safe and we don't have the same kind of concerns or worries. But these are, you know, fears and safety issues and violence that these kids deal with every day. And so every day they're driving through dangerous neighborhoods on the buses, on the vans to get to the school, and they have to confront that. And so it's not a surprise, unfortunately, for some of the people that there are these conflicts and that things like this happen.
So on top of the mountains that these children have to climb already, and they do, they have this fear. You know, we think, oh, you're going to school, and we think, oh, it's safe, it's school. And again, you said it's from our position of privilege, but these children have an added layer to it.
Yeah. I mean, multiple layers. I mean, they're so, for many of the students in the Pittsburgh public school system, in those surrounding neighborhoods and communities, and specifically for many of the students that are at Oliver, there's just mountains of challenges that they face, mountains of, you know, systematic injustice, systematic racism that they don't even know they're facing, limited resources, limited opportunities, and influenced by the people that surround them in their communities and the people that have, you know, that pressure them. And I can't even imagine what it's like to face that as a kid, let alone as a grown up.
And yet here we are.
And then you add to it. I mean, this is 2 years into COVID, and we all know, if you've paid attention during COVID, you all know that the schools that were already struggling, the school districts that were already struggling, the teachers and the students that were already struggling pre March 2020, it's made 10 times worse. It has made the inequity of the educational system so much more devastating and so much more visible. And these teachers, these school administrators, these families, they're burnt out already. And it's just a nightmare for some of them.
Yeah, it's just a lot. Mm-hmm. So let's stop and fast forward a bit. The shooting happens. Marquise was killed. And, you know, I read part of Toni Norman's column, and it said that Marquise wasn't named. We didn't know his name. He was this unnamed student. But now we know his name. But more than that, we know that he was a kid with a contagious smile, and he was kind, and he helped his other students, and he loved to color, and he loved math, and he was his mother's heart. She fought for him. She, you know, when you are the mother, the parent of a special needs kid, one of the things that you learn is you learn how to fight. And I don't necessarily mean put up your dukes, but you learn to advocate for your child in ways that you didn't even imagine you would have to. And the teachers, there was some time off after the shooting to get let everyone take a breath and they come back to school, or they're going to come back to school. And how do you enter into the picture?
Well, let me go back to something you said about his name. He wasn't named right away in the news for very real reasons, you know. Yes. Family needs to be notified. And then he's named. And one of the things I heard from several of the teachers is that they don't want people to forget his name. And we live in a world, we live in a culture, we live in a society where we move on with the news cycle. And so as we have been confronted with the movement in these last 2 years, the movement towards racial equity and racial justice has been going on, but it came to the forefront when we faced the George Floyd killing. And one of the sayings that they offer in their protests, in their shouts and their cries is, say their name, say their name. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's power in saying somebody's name, and we forget it. We in our privilege, in our, you know, get caught up in our own world and our own needs. We forget the names, and the people who are affected by it will never forget the names. And so we don't want to forget the name of Marquise Campbell. Even if we don't know him, we don't want to forget that he was the victim of this violence, and that this violence is a symptom of a structure that is so broken and so flawed. And if we forget his name, we forget that it's our responsibility to be part of the solution. And so by remembering him, remembering his name, it calls us to action. And I think if I'm thinking as a person of faith, you know, there is power in saying somebody's name. I have called you by name. You are mine, the scripture says. In the resurrection story, Mary recognizes Jesus when he says her name. There is power in that. And so saying his name, Marquise, saying it and remembering it forces us to deal with it and carry that with us. And hopefully in a way that encourages us, that demands us to do better, to be better, and to be part of the solution rather than ignoring it. So then how I get involved is part of the solution. This happened on Wednesday, and later that afternoon I was in the church, and we get a call to the church from a fellow pastor, a Presbyterian pastor on the north side. His name was Steve Wirth. And he was a pastor of Community House Presbyterian, which is around the corner from AGH. And he said, you know, I don't know what we need to do, but I'm feeling the need to gather some clergy together and see, you know, what can we do? How can we respond? Like, what needs to happen? And can you be with us tomorrow morning? And I said, sure, you know, I'll rearrange my schedule. And we got together with some clergy, not a ton, but some. And when I came in to that meeting on Thursday morning, Mayor Ed Gainey was there. Some of his staff was there, and then some clergy, and then one of the people that works in the schools as a counselor or a social worker in the city schools, not in specifically Oliver. And we had a time where we could talk about and address and kind of share what we're feeling and thinking. And Steve and I were in the minority as white clergy, and we both kind of allowed space for our colleagues to share what they're feeling and how they want to address this. And there really was this desire to want to be part of the solution. And I had worked with Mayor Ed Gainey when he was a representative, when I was serving in Wilkinsburg. And I truly believe, I don't know what kind of mayor he's going to be. I don't know what kind of politician he is. He is a wonderful man. He has got a good heart. He is a person of faith. And he was very passionate when he spoke to us about wanting to make a difference and understanding that there's so many layers and he needs all parts of the community to work together. He can't do it alone. The police can't do it alone. The schools can't do it alone. Everybody has to be part of the solution or it won't work. It won't change. And so we talked about some initial work. What do we want to do? And somebody mentioned a prayer vigil, and several of the Black clergy said, they don't have the strength to do any more prayer vigils. that they're prayer vigiled out, that it's too painful, it's too raw, they just can't do that. And we certainly get it. And so we left the meeting thinking, okay, let's regroup in a couple weeks. Let's think about some solutions, kind of put together what's going on to address these issues on the north side and how we can build upon it. And I left that meeting thinking, like, this was a great beginning conversation, but I'm really feeling like we need to do, I want to do something.
Right. And yeah, you can't just stay silent.
Yeah. Yes. But I didn't want to just do something for the sake of doing something. And so I was praying about it that night and continuing the conversation with Brittany via text. She's not just a member of my congregation, a friend, close to her family. And later that night, I mean, she's having a very hard time, as I can imagine. And, I sent her a prayer on a text and, in talking to her, we kind of thought, like, what would it look like if some of us, clergy or persons of faith, when the staff and the teachers and the administration come back into that building, that return, that physical return to that space is trauma. It's traumatizing. It'll trigger them because they've experienced that. That's in their mind.
The place that was once safe is now tainted, if you will.
It is. And I'm not sure any of them would have called it safe, though. I mean, I think it was a difficult place to work, a difficult place to go to school, and they've dealt with violence and before. I think this was so much more severe, much more significant, and it hit so much closer to home. And so all of a sudden, a school shooting is no longer across the country or in a different state. All of a sudden, it's in their school. And so I said, I can't imagine what it will feel like for them to just pull up into the parking lot and to walk into the building to see where that van was. I mean, and the van driver. And so I said, maybe it's just us showing up. And so Brittany was able to connect me with one of the teachers who was kind of coordinating different people's responses, like how could they help Marquise's mom? How can they help the students? And so I connected with her and started a conversation. And then she connected me with the principal, Tony, who is a wonderful person. I've gotten to know him a little bit, and he it just has a heart for the school and is trying to make a difference and trying to do better and be better. And I said, we'd like to be there, not to do anything other than to simply be there for support and solidarity. If somebody, sees us with a smile or not a smile because we're a mask, but like our eyes to, a gesture. And he was so welcoming of that. And he said, let me talk to my boss. I'm assuming that's the interim superintendent, make sure that's okay. We got the go ahead. And I shared it with my colleague that I work with at Calvary, Reverend Larry, and kind of shared it amongst people that we're just going to show up. They were coming in with a phased return. So Monday, some of the staff was coming, administration, Tuesday, a few more, and then Wednesday, everybody would return. And so the idea was simply to be there outside when they walk in so that they know they're not alone.
With no agenda.
No.
Your agenda was to have no agenda.
To have no agenda, to simply be there for whatever they might need. And so that's what we did. And it was Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We showed up every day, and we had little gifts that Steve Wirth, that Presbyterian pastor, brought these peace cranes, these origami peace cranes that his congregation made.
Yeah.
They had prayed over them because they celebrate the season of peace, and he gave each person a peace crane. And then us at Calvary, we bought several years ago when the Tree of Life shooting happened, Wendell August Forge made Stronger Than Hate ornaments. Mm-hmm. So we pulled our resources and got 65 of these ornaments so that when the teachers and staff came in, they would each get one of these ornaments just to let them know we're thinking about them, we're praying for them, we love them, and we were just there for them. And I will say all 3 days, but more so the first 2 days when there was a small group of us, the teachers, the staff were so incredibly receptive. I mean, some of them just said hi and kept walking. Some of them, were in tears. Some of them, you could see the visible trauma. And some of them wanted hugs. Some of them asked for prayers Some of them just appreciated having somebody to say hi to them and greet them as they walked in. And that was important for us to do and to be a part of.
So this story obviously isn't over, but the clergy part of it, where are you all going next? Because you said, you know, say his name, remember his name. And I know that the standing outside isn't the end for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question. One of the things I thought about myself as I reflected over the last weekend in prayer, and I said this to Brittany, was as a pastor and as Brittany's pastor, I would have showed up if it were just for her. Mm. Like as a pastor that cares about the people in my church, if one of my church members is going through something that is traumatizing like that, I want to be there for them as I can. And so even if it were just her, I would have been there. But it wasn't just her. It was the staff and administration and teachers that are in that building. And for us, like for me and for some of us, like coming alongside the staff was a place where we could make a difference right away, because we know that there are a lot of struggles. And so, like you said, the next question is, I always quote Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., where do we go from here? That was the name of his last book. Where do we go from here? We can't forget the name. We can't forget him. We can't forget the violence and the layers of injustice that he is facing, that they are facing. And so part of what I've done just over the last few days is to start having some more intentional conversations with the staff and the teachers, with people who are part of the teachers union, with people who are part of the administration, with people who are connected to the government, to truly understand all the layers, because it's all broken. And the solution is somewhere in the middle of all of them. And it for me, the immediate response is to begin having more intentional conversations with people who are living in that system and are facing that and dealing with that. And then you just start to, from there, you kind of have to pick it apart and figure out like where is God calling us to move? Where is God calling us to get involved? You know, is it, you know, to come alongside the students? Is it to work with the teachers and the teachers union? Is it to attend school board meetings and to find out, you know, what the school board is facing and the interim superintendent? Is it, you know, it doesn't end there. This goes into the laws that are made in Harrisburg and how all these laws and all these school fundings directly impact these students and these families in our neighborhoods. And we can't, it just doesn't end in our neighborhood. There's the bigger picture. And you have to find ways of understanding and getting and be involved and being proactive in all of those systems and all of those layers.
I think there are folks who are listening that might say, I can't do protests. That's not my comfort level. I think what you all did, and you mentioned the Black pastor saying, we can't do one more vigil. Can't do it. What you did, and by you, I mean all of the clergy, and I don't know if there were any lady out there.
Yeah, there were some.
Just standing out there, being a presence, was probably the most powerful thing you could have done at the time, because it's not a vigil where you're sitting. You know, sometimes vigils, I'm not negating vigils, but maybe I am. I'm saying that sometimes that it's that thoughts and prayers, mm-hmm. kind of our thoughts and prayers are with you. And I do believe in the power of prayer, but I sometimes think that prayer is action as well. And I feel like you all were a living prayer standing outside. And it just how powerful.
And I think if we look around at some of the things our city, Pittsburgh, has faced over the last several years, maybe decade, you know, the people that are living in the communities within the city They're tired of people of faith showing up right after a tragedy and then disappearing and never coming back. And so you're right. Prayer needs to move us to action. I don't want us, you know, I am a person of action, that, you know, with my life, with my ministry, it is important for me to understand where justice needs to happen, that the kingdom of heaven is bringing about God's justice. And that is at the heart of who I am as a follower of Jesus Christ and as a pastor. However, I also think that we have to be more directive about our prayers. Like, first of all, we have to be praying for this system and these injustices every single day. Like, we can say, oh, we're praying for you, but are you really? Are you really getting on your knees and praying for this every day? And the second part of the prayer is, God, how do I respond? How do I get involved? How do I become part of the solution now?
Marquise Campbell, his light was put out way too soon. Let us continue to say his name. Kelly, thank you for joining me in Meet in the Middle. Thank you for pushing us to put our prayers into action. God bless. Terry Pratchett said, "Do you not know that a man is not dead while his name is still spoken?" Marquise Campbell, let us remember and say his name. He deserves that. This is the end of this session of Meet in the Middle. Next week, I will be interviewing Brittany Bova Mickens, the woman that Reverend Kelly Smith spoke about, the teacher at Oliver Academy. I hope you'll join us. Be blessed.
Meet in the Middle is a production of the Western Pennsylvania Conference of the United Methodist Church. If you have comments or suggestions for future shows, email us at antiracism@wpaumc.org. Thanks for listening. To find out more about the Western Pennsylvania Conference, go to wpaumc.org.